This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Wouldn't you like to take a vacation from your bills? Well, you can. With credit card balances at an all-time high and Golden Oak's 5.25% rate, you could be saving thousands of dollars after a simple phone call. Call today and get your cash in as little as 14 days and make no payments for 2 months. Visit GoldenOakLending.com to speak to someone today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
6.19 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with Bolt Cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
Mike DeCorsi talking college hoops with Mullion Haugh, Sporting News college hoops columnist, Big Ten Network studio analyst. He's a Liverpool supporter, but we let him on anyways. Mike DeCorsi with Mullion Haugh on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to Mike DeCorsi, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Michael, good morning. How are you, sir?
Molly, good morning. David, good morning to you.
Loved yesterday. Listen, this weekend is one of the great weekends on the sports calendar, and I thought it delivered yesterday. I thought there were some really fun games. I was stunned at how Clemson didn't turn up in the first half. I was not expecting a 13-point performance. I did have Drake as my upset special, so it was delightful, if you have him on the bracket, to watch what they managed to pull off. Just a really interesting, strange kind of performance. The way they actually turned the ball over, they're usually much better than that protecting the ball, but man, did they fight every possession, and they had a heck of a performance.
Yeah, that was interesting. One of the interesting things about the way yesterday went for Drake and Mizzou was the fact that Drake didn't play their best. They did an effective job with what they do, which is to force you to get uncomfortable, but they didn't play their best. I thought they forced clock a lot more than they used. I mean, they want to go late, but they don't want to violate the shot clock, and they did that a couple of times in the first half. They turned it over a high number of times relative to how they play, because there are so few possessions, you don't want to turn it over. I mean, the percentage of turnovers becomes much higher if you turn it. I don't remember what their final number was, but if you turn it over a dozen times in a game, that's a lot different than turning it over a dozen times or even 15 times in a high-paced game. And they didn't all shoot the ball great, but they were so precise in their execution when they didn't turn it over that Mizzou was really uncomfortable, and they did exactly what I thought they would do. It's just that Mizzou reacted to that even more disappointingly, I guess, than I had imagined. I thought that it would be a Drake victory, but I didn't think they could play like that and win as comfortably as they did.
Mike, let's look at the McNeese State upset of Clemson, because going in, I'll acknowledge it made me uncomfortable to have Will Wade openly accept a job at North Carolina State and also still coach McNeese State in the tournament, the biggest moment of this program's history, and it turned out to be the day of their lives. I think that he's a terrific coach. I was a little bit surprised that they allowed him to coach, but they did. The players were not distracted, and all's well that ends well. What was your reaction to how that all unfolded?
Yeah, I will. The only thing I disagree with what you just said is all's well that ends well. One of the things, the line I used in the column that I wrote critical of how he comported himself was that winning and losing are not the only two outcomes in a game. And I thought that for him to do what he did on Wednesday and how he handled the questions at the press conference, I mean, there's a roadmap followed by 1,000 other coaches in the last 20 years of college basketball on how to deal with that question. Oh, I'm just focused on my team. We have a chance to do something special here, and we're going to deal with that. In some variation of that sentence. And there are public relations professionals that could have helped Will understand that in the unlikely event that he hadn't ever seen anybody deal with that question. And yet he's got to be this little scoundrel. Like, he gets off on it, and it's just ridiculous. And I just don't find it funny, amusing, interesting, compelling, or anything. That's for reality TV. This is sports, and it's college sports, and you're supposed to behave like an adult and a professional. And somehow he always manages to make sure that he's a little bit outside that boundary, if not a lot.
Well said. You know the Big Ten very well. They went 4-0, and interesting today because you got a chance to double down. You got Michigan State against Bryant. We know that Maryland plays Grand Canyon. We're very interested in the Illinois game here and Oregon against Liberty. It seems like Illinois, with the lowest seed, might have the toughest game with Xavier winning in the play-in.
But the problem is, Molly, is that Illinois' toughest game every time they take the court, with the possible exception of when they went to the Garden and played Duke, their toughest game is against themselves and what they're capable of. That's the challenge that they meet a little more rarely than you'd prefer. They don't always go into games and say, we're going to be the best version of themselves. Or they don't. Maybe they say it and they don't live up to it. That's been the frustrating element of this Illinois season. And some of it's being young, I get that, but you're not that young anymore. You've played 35 college games, and a lot of them, the vast majority of them, have been played against high-end opposition. So you should be accustomed to that by now. And they have played great basketball on so many occasions that it gives you belief not only that you can conquer Xavier, but what lies beyond that, Kentucky or Tennessee or whomever. I've seen people say, I think they're going to the Elite Eight, and I can't argue with that other than, yeah, but it means they got to play well 3 times in a row. How many times has that happened this year? So that's the thing about Illinois that concerns me going into today. Xavier's certainly good enough to beat a less than ideal Illinois effort. But there are a lot of teams in this tournament you could say that about.
Mike, great column on the matchup between Arkansas and St. John's tomorrow. The 5th time in the NCAA tournament that John Calipari and Rick Pitino will meet. They're 2-2. And I love the way that you point out that even though they're often compared because of their similar paths and pasts, I think stylistically they're in contrast in many ways in terms of the way they coach the basketball teams. How much fun will that be, and how similar and different are they at this stage of their careers?
Well, in reality, they've never really been similar other than they're both handsome and Italian. I don't think there are very many comparisons. I mean, you have the fact that they both coached at Kentucky. They both coached in the NBA. They both didn't coach great in the NBA. They both won championships. They both made multiple Final Fours and have made Final Fours at 3 different schools. They're the only coaches in history to do that. So their records may be similar, and their paths may be a little similar, but stylistically they're not even close to the same. And they're not even really personally all that close to the same. They're different in that way as well. I remember in the 80s when I was a young basketball writer and reading, and I pointed out in the piece that I wrote today that it was in some of the biggest papers in America, the comparison of the two of them, and writers calling Calipari a Pitino clone. And it frustrated the heck out of me when I was young then. And I didn't have the platform to tell everybody how full of it they were. because they weren't similar. Rick has always preferred a very wide open style, up and down, press if you have to, get the ball moving, shoot it from deep. He was one of the very first coaches to adopt the three-point approach. He was a pioneer in that regard. And Calipari has always been a favored control, defending the lane, making sure that you are keeping opponents from getting anywhere near the rim. Controlled approach on offense was what he preferred, in large part because he didn't have, at the time he was establishing himself as a coach, superior talent to almost anybody he played. People who think of Calipari now as just a recruiter weren't around or weren't paying attention in the 80s and the early 90s when he was winning games with UMass guys that, like, I was in Pittsburgh then, and Duquesne didn't recruit them. They were from Pittsburgh, and Calipari came in and got Jim McCoy and Will Herndon. And I covered those guys in high school, and even Duquesne, which was in the Atlantic 10 at the time, didn't offer those guys. And he gets them, and he wins 30 games with them and plays in the Sweet 16. So they really aren't that similar in that sense, but now they face each other once again. They have, for their lack of similarity, they found themselves on the same court. I think this is the 29th meeting between the two of them. It's pretty remarkable that they've intersected that often.
Mike, I know you're going to be covering Duke and Mount St. Mary's today. I'm curious, you know, I the more you hear about Cooper Flagg, the more you start kind of picking nit. I told David before I made my selections, I want to see an MRI, but but that's unrealistic. I'm just wondering, the fact that he's available to go, does that mean he goes? Does that mean he starts? I know he wants to play. How do they deploy him today?
Today is not particularly important,
right?
To how, I mean, they can beat Mount St. Mary's with me playing his position. No offense to Mount St. Mary's, but the other four guys are really good. But I think the important thing is that he be involved on Saturday at a reasonably high level, because you don't just walk in at the Sweet 16 and say, okay, I'm here, everything's right. When you mix in players who haven't been involved for a while, it can be a little disruptive. And when you mix in a player who is such a profound part of what you do at the Sweet 16 level, when if it just doesn't click for 3 minutes, it could change the game and send you home. I mean, it may not, but it could. And so you want him to be involved on Sunday. If he's ready to go on Sunday, that's great. If he can go up down a court a few times today, okay. But I'm not even sure I'd risk that. I'd have him dressed, but I wouldn't risk it unless for some reason Duke found itself in a game against UMB, the combination of UMBC and FDU, and found itself in a real game. I don't think that will happen. I mean, if you go through the ACC tournament and beat Louisville and Carolina and Georgia Tech with basically no Cooper Flagg, you certainly can do it against Mount St. Mary's. But I'm very much intrigued to see what he's available to do on Sunday.
So, Mike, UCLA was one of the Big Ten teams that won its first-round game, beating Utah State 72-47. And afterward, Mick Cronin, I respect everything that he's accomplished, and I know you probably know him very well from his 13 years in Cincinnati. And I'm just curious, help me understand what it is about him that he seems like when he talks, he either wants to incite or insult, and he's very rough around the edges. And I think that he comes at you directly. So there's part of me that respects everything that he's accomplished because that's an effective communicating style for him. And other times I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this guy is still talking. So knowing him as well as you do, help me understand his method.
I don't always understand his method. There have been things that have been vexing to me, that the complaints about the travel in the Big Ten, I didn't understand because I looked at it as, if you put it in your players' heads that that's a thing, then it might be a thing. And so I would not have done that. But first of all, Mick is one of the best people in coaching. He's a great person, great father to his daughter, Sammy. And a really one of the people that you would want to live next to. I said in my article about Will Wade, that there are people that you would not want to marry into your family, and you would not be disappointed if Mick somehow did. He's a really good person. Sometimes there are things that he does that vex me, for sure. But I think that at the end, it always seems to work out for him. He knows what he's doing. When he said the things he said back in, I think it was early January, about his players not bringing it on the, at the level they needed to, he took a lot of criticism for that. And I have a friend who's a UCLA alum who texts me every time he gets upset with Mick, basically, as if I'm like in charge of, I'm like the president of Mick Incorporated, and I'm supposed to fix it. And I said to him, look, he's just, you know, he's just trying to get his guys' attention. Don't worry. And then they won like their next seven games in a row and became this team that is now in the second round of the NCAAs. So he has a method for almost everything he does. And as frustrating as it can be, his press conferences don't go outside any lines of professionalism or comportment or anything like that. He is wary of saying one thing and it being interpreted another. Like Calipari might have been wary of walking onto a court in 1989 and wearing a suit and having people call him a Patino clone, even though it didn't make any sense. So I understand that part of it. But there are times when I don't agree with what he says. I'm not sure that yesterday was necessarily particularly, especially in the Will Wade atmosphere. I wasn't particularly bothered by anything he said yesterday.
Did anybody yesterday surprise you with their performance? Is anybody, any of the teams you saw, capable of doing significantly more than you thought? And I'll just say, I thought BYU was a lot better than I thought they were. They played very well, and I was genuinely surprised at how bad they beat VCU. I thought VCU was a better team.
Molly, was this you being nice and setting me up so I can say I was 16-0 yesterday?
Is that wow, look at you.
That's awesome.
It's the only time in my career it's ever happened. But I did get every game right. And I do have BYU, by the way, going to the Elite Eight.
Wow.
I liked the way their draw opened up for them. I thought they were in a good spot. And I don't think they'll go, if they do get to the Elite Eight, I don't think they'll beat a healthy Duke. But I like the way they play. I like how offensively oriented they are. I mean, the way they play their offense, really effective. The guys have all bought into the system that and approach that Kevin Young brought with him from the NBA. In order to justify my bragging there, I will point out that I was very critical of the Kevin Young hire. I didn't like it. I didn't look at that particular decision as following what typically works. Bringing guys in from the NBA has not worked often, but this was he's gotten off to a great start. He's brought in for next year, the number one player in the country, AJ Devonta. So they're off to a terrific start at BYU, and will be more so if I'm right and they wind up in the Elite Eight. That'll be a heck of a year for the Cougars.
Okay, clairvoyant one. Tell us what will happen tonight when you talk about a great coaching matchup. You've got Danny Hurley in UConn. You've got Porter Moser in Oklahoma. We talked to Porter yesterday. There's a lot of people in Chicago, big Oklahoma fans tonight. How do you see that one unfolding?
Yeah, you know, I really like Jeremiah Fears. I think he's outstanding for Oklahoma, one of the better freshman players in the country. I think UConn's got a more complete group. They're a team that has, much like Gonzaga, has really wrestled with who they are, what they can be for a lot of the year. And they started to show down the stretch. Some of it was that their key, Liam McNeely, their key offensive player, was hurt for all of January. And that really threw them off track. And so I think they're just starting to get to where they should be. I think Oklahoma has played much better of late, but I don't think their ceiling is as high. To me, it'll come down to whether or not UConn gets the level of offensive production from their veterans that they need to. If guys are making shots at the level that they should, then I think that UConn wins. That's who I picked. But Oklahoma is going to be in that game. They're exceedingly well coached by Porter. He's done a great job. I think their season performance was underrated, not by the committee, but by the public. Playing in that league was really hard. And not winning an overwhelming number of games in that league against the schedule they were presented was not the underachievement that some ascribed. I think they had a really strong year, and they'll certainly present UConn a great challenge.
Who has a chance to make an extended run out of today? And I don't mean Duke. I mean, who, you know, what team could surprise that you have already picked that could maybe, do you have another BYU in your hip pocket?
I don't necessarily. That's the one that from the middle to bottom of the field that I projected to go deepest. But I will say that one of the teams that's interesting to watch is Maryland, because I thought, like, if Maryland had been Houston's four instead of Florida's four, I would have Maryland in the Final Four, because I think they're outstanding. I really love Derek Queen. When I look at mock drafts and I see Derek Queen anywhere between 10 and 14, I'm like, folks, get back in the gym and watch again. I mean, that's not the 10th best player in this draft. He may be the second best player in this draft. I really like Harper from Rutgers. I think he's outstanding and has great potential. But Derek Queen is being vastly underrated. The other day, Julian Reese, Angel's brother,
yes,
plays for Maryland,
yep,
tweeted out in talking about Derek. He called him Baby Jokic. And I had made the exact same comparison in talking with my colleagues at BTN over the last couple of weeks. Like, to be Jokic or any approximation of that, I mean, you have to put in unbelievable work, which is why, like, Kevin Durant is still Kevin Durant. I was in the gym one time with him watching him work out in the summer, and I'm like, this is crazy. He's already Kevin Durant. What is he doing? I mean, the work ethic is just phenomenal. And you've got to be that if you want to be one of those guys. And so I don't know Derek at all, other than to watch him play. And so I don't know whether that is what he wants, but if he wants it, it's there for him. Maybe not to get to that level, but if you're 85%, 90% of Jokic, you're one of the best players in the league, and I think that's available to him.
Great stuff, Mike. Really appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys.
That is Mike DeCourcy.
Great insight. He's on his way to Raleigh. Yeah. He'll be covering
16-0.
That's impressive.
It's pretty good.
It's a good expert.
It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 The Score.
March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us, or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Ma. Happy anniversary. Yeah, of course. Are you with Dad? Can you hear me? Hey, I did it. Yeah, I'm going to Chicago. You know, usually Rule 5 picks are, you know, tough to make decisions with and everything, and, you know, you made it really easy on us, so you're coming to Chicago with us.
Yeah,
me too.
Yeah,
I am. I got a camera on me right now, so no, I'm not crying just yet.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. That is the voice of Shane Smith. He was on the White Sox Twitter handle. He was first informed that he had made the team, that the Rule 5 pick wasn't going back to Milwaukee. He was going into the White Sox, likely their starting rotation as the fifth starter. And then they had what you just heard, which was the video of him calling his parents to tell them he had made the team and that they were going to come to Chicago and see him pitch for the White Sox. And he did get choked up as he was talking about
it. Very cool moment.
Achievement of a lifetime.
Very cool moment. He will turn 25 years old on April 4th. So just a couple weeks away from his 25th birthday. And hearing him share that news with his parents, pretty moving, because this is somebody who probably felt like his future was in doubt. The Sox showed him they liked his potential when they drafted him in a Rule 5 draft, but you never know. You never know because it's a risk. And
right.
Now they have to keep him on the 26-man roster. That's the way the rules work.
Yes.
So he's here for the duration.
And there's not many. It's not very easy for a Rule 5 guy to make the roster and stay with the team that takes him. Probably easier with the White Sox because of their situation.
Yeah, I think so.
They had the first pick, and that's the player they went after. And
you might not win a lot, but you're going to play a lot.
Yeah.
you are that's somebody right. who has to be part of the solution. You don't want to be part of the problem. And Shane Smith can be, based on his spring training showing for the White Sox, there's a lot to be encouraged by. I don't want to say excited about. This is a team that is going to struggle. But Shane Smith will fit in nicely in a rotation that needs stability and consistency. And he has been both in spring training.
Yeah, congratulations to him.
It's Massachusetts really native.
Something special.
Went to Wake Forest.
And he, you know, it's funny because he's obviously, he just pitched against the Brewers. He's got tons of friends on the team. He came up with all those guys. So it's pretty funny.
Undrafted, I believe. He had Tommy John already in 2021, and he was undrafted free agent with the Brewers. So there's some probably familiarity with some guys in the Cubs camp. You know, with obviously Craig Counsell. I'd be curious to see how this all develops, because you look at the rotation, and so they got some good news and some bad news yesterday.
Yeah.
Shane Smith, the good news, he has emerged as a potential starter in the five-man rotation. Drew Thorpe, who wanted to be one of those guys as well, likely won't be. We don't know the MRI results. We don't know the test results, but he did wave the trainers onto the field to begin the second inning, and he left the mound, and that's not good news for the guy that was, I think, the centerpiece of that Dylan Cease trade. Would you say that?
Yeah, I would.
And was very encouraging in spots last season before he got injured. And so
originally up with the Yankees, and he's traded to the Padres in the Juan Soto deal.
Yeah.
So that's pretty special
pretty
to be
special.
Part of that kind of trade. And then traded to the White Sox in the Dylan Cease deal, as you say. Probably, he was the minor league pitcher of the year in 2023, and you thought he would be able to take off last year, but he had an issue in his arm, and didn't they scrape down the bone or something? It was something to make him feel more comfortable. It didn't take. They had to give him a cortisone shot in January, so he couldn't start spring training as quickly as he wanted. And then you get into here we are. The guy's just trying to gear up so he can be ready, just starting to pitch in the last few weeks to get ready for the season. And as you say, he feels something in his elbow.
You don't really like
him out. No.
When you're having a soreness setback.
Oh, boy.
That's a really complicated way of just saying I'm not healing well.
Right.
And I'm not ramping up. And it's just not a good development for a guy that was supposed to be
part of it.
Part of the
solution.
Rebuild.
Yeah.
Yeah. And definitely your best pitchers are not going to be the best pitchers in your organization are not going to be in major league uniforms until midsummer, late summer, if you're the White Sox. Hagen Smith and Noah Schultz will likely stay at Birmingham and then probably go to Charlotte and then maybe make their way to Chicago by year's end.
I forget where I was reading it. It might have been Jim Margulis, but somebody did a story on how with some of the new statistics, some of the new things going on, they had to basically remeasure everyone. So, like, for instance, I believe
for the strike zone stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Noah Schultz is now 6'10".
He grew. He's still
grew
growing.
An inch.
Yeah.
Conversely, your guy Andrew Vaughn, now 5'10".
He shrunk?
He had been listed as 6 feet tall.
Well, did he shrink or were they exaggerating?
I think they must have been exaggerating.
They measured him with spikes before?
I don't know exactly what went awry, but I know he is now...
He's 5'10"?
He's less than 6 feet.
How's he going to see over the lineman? Oh, wait, that's wrong sport.
But it was just, it's like some of them were like, oh, wow, look at this guy. He's an inch taller, or that guy is...
Would that help explain the power shortage in Andrew Vaughn?
It made you wonder. It made you wonder.
Did they not measure him twice before they drafted him fourth?
What was weird is like, was it Fletcher? Like one of those guys is like an inch or two taller. And you're kind of like, wouldn't you always want to pretend like you were taller, even if you weren't?
You always do. Yeah. You know what I mean? You round up. You definitely round up.
Yeah. And that's, I think that might have been what was going on with Andrew.
Yeah. Horton, well, if you're 6'1¾", you're 6'2".
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If somebody asks how tall you are, don't say I'm 6'1¾".
If you're 6'1¾", you're 6'4".
Right, probably so.
In the program.
I stand corrected. Andrew Vaughn, of course, was the third overall pick in the 2019 draft that didn't include a measurement yardstick, apparently.
Apparently they didn't.
He was not measured.
Isn't that weird, though?
It's a little strange.
That he lost a couple inches?
A little strange. Yeah, you don't want to do that.
Just he would have had a homer, only he's just a tiny bit shorter.
I don't know if height and weight matter much for a first baseman. I think
height might matter.
Yeah, bigger target, stretching for the ball. See Derek Lee.
Yeah.
Better first baseman. Derek Lee or Paul Konerko?
Derek Lee, 6'8", I believe.
Come on.
What do you mean?
Not even
Paul
close.
Konerko.
Not even close.
Okay. Just a debate that I got dragged into, okay. And I was curious.
Who dragged you into that debate?
A bunch of people talking sports one night.
Okay.
When was this? In the 19...
Cup fans?
I think it was Monday of this week. Monday or Tuesday of this week.
Cup Hall of Famer.
I think that was part of the reason the conversation got going because Derek Lee was on TV about his father and his uncle being Japan.
That's right.
So I think that's how we got into Derek Lee.
Yes. Okay.
But Paul Konerko, he's an all-timer.
Yeah. Paul Konerko, one of the best Sox players ever, for sure.
I mean, you don't live in a house like that unless you have a career like Paul Konerko has.
That's how you get yourself. That's how you get yourself. 40,000 square feet.
Paul Konerko had 439 home runs.
Yeah.
Dude, I love your Cub fandom. I'm right behind you, but let's be objective here.
Do you know the answer to the question that I gave? I just asked you the question that was proposed in this question.
Don't tell me you said Paulie.
Paul Konerko and blew the minds of the people that I was talking to.
I'm proud of you.
Wow, because even you could.
I'm proud of you.
I literally thought Dustin was going to say Derek Lee. I was waiting for it.
That's why he asked the question. I thought he was trying to stir something up.
Right. He would have, knowing Dustin, he'd been like, oh, he's so tall and his eyes are so blue.
That
was about Chris Bryant. I'm sorry.
Two very good first basemen, though, for a long time on each side of town. Spoiled here.
And what brought it up was height. I wasn't even going to bring it up, but we talked about height, and Derek Lee was a tall first baseman.
Did you or did you not nearly faint the first time you saw Chris Bryant in person?
I was pretty impressed in person, absolutely. Yeah. You know who else I was impressed with? Who else was I impressed with in that clubhouse that we talked to, actually? Actually interviewed.
I think...
John Lester.
Oh, yeah.
Chris Bryant wouldn't talk to us, but John Lester would.
I was going to say the former manager. I was going to say David Ross.
David Ross.
Because you had a private conversation.
I wonder what Rossi's up to. So Derek Lee, just for a point of comparison, 331 career home runs. So he's got over...
Is it all about home runs at first base? That's the only stat that matters?
It's apples to apples.
How many putouts? Because he was a tall drink of water.
Did he get the edge because he's taller? Come on, Dustin.
And again, remember, the conversation started because we're talking about the height of first baseman.
Yes. Yeah.
Derek Lee probably the tallest first baseman of merit on either side of town.
Ever? I don't know how.
I don't have a list of heights in front of me.
You don't have to be exactly 100% right. It's sports talk radio.
I'm just saying. Big Frank.
Big Frank is pretty big.
Had a nickname that was big.
Big Frank's very big.
Big Frank could be 6'6", and Derek Lee 6'5".
I think Big Frank he's outside linebacker.
Yeah.
He was probably measured at the combine.
Tight end. He was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
6'5".
Okay, and how? What's Derek Lee?
Well, you said 6'5", so I went with it.
Yeah.
I'm going to look that up. I got to throw that in the Google machine.
I think he's 6'5".
Yeah, I think maybe Big Frank. If
Big Frank also
towering over D. Lee
can be found. The key to his size can be found in his nickname. He wasn't called Tiny Frank.
Don't call him mismeasured Frank. He's 6'5" and all of it. Yeah. Fascinating comparison. Did not expect to be making today.
Wide body dude.
Big Frank?
Yeah, no doubt. Yes. We got Mike Palm. We're going to bring in our buddy, our friend from Vegas, and we'll talk about what's going on in the NCAA tournament from that perspective. We'll do it next. It's Mully and Haw on the Score.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, proudly presents the star of our show,
Mike Palm. Vice President of Operations of Circa, the D, and Golden Gate.
Vegas!
Vegas, baby! Vegas!
Twitter at Mike Palm Circa.
Why don't I take you somewhere that you've never been?
Where's that?
Vegas?
Let's head to Vegas with Mike Palm, sponsored by Circa Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be, with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Remember, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas.
I don't care if the sun don't shine.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always a delight to talk to our dear friend in the desert. It's Mike Palm, and he joins us on the Aturo Hotline, Aturo Tires. New tires for spring. Check them out, aturo.com. Mike, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good morning, Mully, and good morning, David. It's great to talk to you guys again. I mean, it's the longest, hardest, fastest pace week of the year for us in this side of the counter, and I don't think we traded for anything though. But I'm glad we only have to do it once a year.
I mean, having been blessed enough to be in Vegas for this round of the NCAA tournament, it is absolutely mad. It is just, it's like you can't get anywhere, do anything, but you're in a casino. There are different corners of the room where something breaks out because someone hit a bet on some obscure prop, and you're trying to follow all the games. It is the energy this weekend is beyond belief.
You know, you make a good point about the obscure bet. Up until the Arkansas-Kansas game last night, the biggest roar in the book at Stadium Swim and in the ballrooms was when High Point got to 10 before Purdue.
That's funny. Oh,
I love that kind of stuff.
Next Thursday and Friday, Spiegel and Holmes will be broadcasting from Circa Swim, noon to 4 Vegas time, 2 to 6 Chicago time. Hey, Mike, you know Mitch is also going to be there, a guy Mitch Rosen. You'll be enjoying that visit. You can catch every game of opening day from the Circus Sportsbook or Stadium Swim. Don't miss the ceremonial first pitch from Hall of Famer Greg Maddux, who lives right down the street, apparently, in the Sportsbook before the first game starts. American Coney Island will be selling Coney Dogs in the Sportsbook, and Apple Pie also for sale. That is next Thursday and Friday. Don't miss it at Circus Swim in Vegas. That's going to be a lot of fun, Mike.
Yeah, and we just secured the catcher for Maddux's first pitch. It's going to be former Cub Michael Barrett.
Oh, my God.
Uh-oh.
Someone take a swing at someone.
Uh-oh.
That's one of the – she had AJ come by just to catch one in the grill. So help us out, Mike. So you know, we're looking at this tournament, and there were a couple of upsets, but nothing – really spectacular. I think McNeese State, the way they opened the first half of that game, seeing Clemson score 13 points, 31-13 at half, that was absolutely unbelievable. We both had Drake, so we saw Drake play enough that we were expecting them to do well. That did not floor us at all. Is this been a pretty chalky tournament? Do you expect that to continue?
Well, no, because it's always expect the unexpected. I will tell you, the Clemson game, heading into early in the week, McNeese was a sharp play. We got professional money on McNeese money line. Then, after Louisville gets stomped by Creighton, 40 miles from their campus at Rupp Arena, I think people started saying, this ACC is really bad. And then they started also taking McNeese with the points against Clemson just to fade the ACC. The surprising result... And you say that McNeese is an upset, but the surprising result from a betting standpoint was Arkansas beating Kansas. We opened that game 2, it closed 6. Pro money, public money, everybody was on Kansas. So from a betting side, the biggest upset was Arkansas winning that game.
any change in the Cubs or the Dodgers based on what happened in Japan? Is that, and how did you feel about what happened in Japan?
Well, you know, I mean, it's sort of hidden, and I mean, it's 3 a.m. I was there because I said, I'll just stay out from St. Patrick's Day. So I was at the book for the first 5 innings of opening day. There was about 80 people there, probably 75, 25 Dodger fans, and probably 60, 40 Japanese.
Wow.
I'm concerned about pitch counts. I get Sasaki. I don't get any of the rest of them. You know, and Yamamoto, I guess he got 73 pitches. Steele's an experienced pitcher. I don't know why he was short. I mean, I got a 65-1 ticket on Imanaga. He's got a no-hitter through 4. I can't even get him out there for the 5th. If you have the Cubs first 5 in the first game, you got to feel sick about that. If you want to bet the Cubs to win the division, it's a better odds now. They were minus 120. Now they're only minus 105 because they lost the first 2 games.
Yeah, our guy Dustin Rhodes thought they'd win 92 at one point. He dropped them to 80 after that series. So that might be an overreaction. But that's how we roll. Is there anyone the Sharps like today? Is there anybody that has that McNeese State flavor going on?
Colorado State's a sharp play. That's a 12 that was favored over a 5. We opened them as a 1-point favorite, bet up to 2.5. A little money coming back. I'll tell you what the sharp play actually is Oklahoma over UConn. And you would think the 2-time defending champs, you know, they're going to get through the first round, and then they got to run into Florida in the round of 32. But the sharp money is actually on Oklahoma in that game.
That is great news. Both David and I have them. We talked to Porter Moser yesterday. He's a great dude. Spent all that time at Loyola. Got him to the Final Four. Here's hoping.
Here's hoping.
Thanks so much. Great talking to you, Mike.
Have a great weekend.
Thanks, fellas. Enjoy the madness.
That is Mike Palm, our friend in the desert. Always a joy to talk to him. And don't forget that 670 The Score will be broadcasting from Stadium Swim on that day from noon to 4 Vegas time, 2 to 6 Chicago time. And Mitch will, of course, be there with the guys.
A lot of fun next weekend.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.